Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rap Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Oh, Lord. I am so tired. How long can this go on?
So you've been working in a coal mine?
Working downtown.
Working in a coal mine?
Unfortunately, it's been a long time since I've watched my heavy metal soundtrack. So, but no, it's even as we pod, we are less than 24 hours away from FallCon, which I set up the charity booth, and then today, my wife and I are dealing with the FallCon fallout, and not even that. I actually feel pretty good because I wore a mask. I actually had hand sanitizer that I thought would sell a little better because I was just selling a quarter a piece. But a few people bought them. A few people were like, oh, yeah, I forgot. And then the con guys, towards the end of the con, I still had a lot of the box left. And I didn't want them because I got plenty of it at home now. And I think they're just going to store it and save it for whenever the next con is. No idea when that is. It's TBA? To be announced.
TBG.
To be announced. No, we're not. TBA.
To be decided.
No, they got announced. The decision is something else, but we'll figure that out. So, hey, as long as I'm talking con, you want me to just talk about it a little bit more?
Sure.
All right. You know, the fall con.
Can't help
how
you're feeling.
I know. I'm actually feeling pretty good. I did not catch a con crud, and I think it's because I wore a mask. People were 50-50 wearing a mask. I used plenty of hand sanitizer, washed my hands. It was kind of weird. And I think I told everybody at the con, I'll announce it here, that was the last MCBF charity garage sale booth. Where I'm not doing it anymore. Kelly basically said, this is your baby, you do it. And I think what decided it is the fact I did it alone. The girls are off. You're retired from cons. It gets to a point where it just wasn't fun. It was fun when we were there and had everything set up, but my wife helped me. We took, I think, 5 carloads out and we only ended up with 3 coming back. And technically one of them were just, those wire racks that, try to kill you when you move them. And so one of them was me bringing them out. One of them was me bringing them back. If we had not gotten a really generous donation of, remember all those graphic novels that the source was dollaring out years ago?
Yes.
I got the rest. So, So Kelly was like, they didn't know what to do. They were just going to recycle them, dump them. And he said, let me take them to the con. So we sold a ton of those. We were in basic liquidation mode. Once I decided that this was it, we probably didn't make as much as we could have, but we were taking offers. We were having fun. The kids would come by and is your daughter being any of the toys on the ground? I mean, I got rid of like a couple Squirrel Girl dolls, a bunch of Captain Marvel dolls. The books we had, how the normal setup was. We do like 4 tables and then the tables next to us. So we're people who canceled at the last minute for whatever reason. I was kind of disappointed because Ben Piskott canceled and I'm real excited to get his graphic novel. So if you're out there listening, Ben, give me a yell or maybe I'll send you a note. I really want to get a hold of one of those and give it a good review on the show, hopefully. I really liked the teaser you had at the last con, but we don't talk about 2020 anymore.
Wait, a teaser? That means he went up to you and went,
no, he was a no-show. There were a lot of people that canceled at the last minute for whatever reasons. So there were actually 3 tables. So next to me, there were 2 tables. So I made the U formation and I loaded it with books. As you know, I went through my graphic novel purge. I went through my book purge. I had huge boxes of books. My father-in-law, my dad were giving me books. Now, suddenly I got all these graphic novels from the source. Oh, it was just fun. So I started out magazines and paperback books, like what you and I think of, the little tiny, the smaller ones. Buck a piece, 3 for a buck. Right, all the other books, $3 a piece, 3 for $5. I don't care what it was. I had Treasury editions from Bloom County. I had Treasury editions from name your comic strip. I had them. I had, you know, since I have all the IDW reprints of Bloom County, I got rid of all the Bloom County books. The Billy and the Boingers book, though, the record of them is still in my possession because I actually played that on college radio once. So there were tons of Star Trek books, you know, and the weird, like, what the F, how to type from like 1970. You know, real important when we were growing up, Corey. Remember taking, I don't know if you took typing classes.
Yes, I did, because I was going to be a writer.
And for me, I wanted it just because I wanted it to know how to do a computer. And also comic writing. You know, I thought I'd be a comic writer. Little did I know we'd be doing a podcast. Corey and I, a fun fact, we met early 1980 and said, tell you what, in the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
We'll do a podcast. And Corey's like, I don't even know what the hell that is, but I'll see you then.
And so, we waited 10 years after that.
Yeah, we did. So, yeah, we had the booth was going good. I had dollar books. I had a ton of higher price rare variants. You know the type, Corey. The ones you and I want. The unused Kirby cover of X book or whatever. You know, the ones that are usually one in 50, one in 100. So just had a ton of those. It was a Gruber bought a bunch of stuff, a bunch of statues and some prints. And he gave.
Wait. I thought Gruber was decluttering. He was Marie Kondo. He was getting rid of statues.
But that was part of it. These are part of the statues that were left over. These are the prints that he no longer wants. And we're talking, he had the first day issue signed by Neil Adams. First day issue is a stamp thing when they did the a series of DC stamps. The creator of the various books would sign an envelope, and then you buy the picture frame with a blow up of the art, and there's the envelope with the stamp, stamped first day issue, and Neil Adams right across it. He sold it. Somebody came up and bought it for her husband, and I'm not going to say names or anything because I have no idea if he listens to the podcast, but he sold that right away. The one thing I would have almost bought from him, he had an Avenger print signed by Stan Lee. On the back was a certificate of authenticity, including photographs when Stan signed it. And some guy come by and he was looking at it and he's hemming and he's hawing. And I made the comment to Pat. I said, yeah, I almost bought that for $400. Matter of fact, I probably might if it's still here. And I was serious. I mean, it was really cool. And then I come back later and it's gone. Pat's like, what happened? Ah, he took me up $400. He said, he took your offer. I said, oh, glad to help. The deal was Pat gave a piece of the action to the charity auction. I don't know how much we made because at the end of the day, I backed out the change that the seed money I started with, and I just gave it all to Kelly and said, here, you count it. It's all yours. He was pretty happy. Halfway through the day, we started cutting deals, especially with kids or cute looking women. You know, I am. Or guys who have that were fairly pleasant, you know, saying if you got a deal, make an offer. Pops that were going for $10, I had sold for $5. By the end of the con, I announced, hey, they're $1 apiece. They're like, you're kidding me. I said, yes, just I want to get rid of them. I want to blow them out. $1 apiece. Toys, we were half pricing. We were selling for $1. I was giving them away. The books, I went every book on the table. 50 cents a piece, 3 for $1. And they were flying. I still got a ton of them. They're all sitting in my storage bin now, but I'm going to bring what's left probably to half price and just, you know, what can I get for that? Well, you can get one graphic novel. Sold. Because, you know, we're just not doing it anymore. Pat didn't sell any statues other than the prints. We sold a ton of stuff. We had some interesting trinkets and necklaces and, you know, things you would wear for cosplaying and things. Eventually a lady came up and she was digging through it. And I said, you know, I had them all $1 apiece or 3 for $2. I said, you want that entire bin? $5. And her eyes, you're kidding me. I said, no, take it. Boom. A couple of minutes later, when Chris came by, she found the cover, found the girl, and went over and gave her the cover for the little plastic tin they were all in. Let's see, what other blowouts did we do? Oh, some lady come by and she said, "Hey, I'm gathering stuff up for PBS." I said, "Tell you what, you got a buck? Yeah. Take that bin of the dollar stuff." She said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, I'll even toss in the lid." Boom. So we blew stuff out. Even though things are gone, I've still got things, and you know where they're gonna show up, right, Corey?
eBay,
right on the eBay. Walking around the con, I didn't get to do a lot of walking. I was not really in a buying mode, mostly because, well, I had money, but the con wasn't really busy. You know how, Corey, it used to be the first day of the con was just jam-packed.
Yeah.
People couldn't breathe. The second day was like,
The first hour would be slow, but then by the second hour, when everybody had gotten in, it would just be jammed.
Yeah.
And there was usually, before it started, a line that would go all the way back to the slides at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that it's because it was a one day? Do you think it's because of the guest list? Or do you think it was because that people just aren't ready to get out and be amongst the unwashed masses?
I think it's all of the above. Because, like I said, people just canceled. Dealers canceled. Some people couldn't because of health problems. There were a lot of things going on at the fairgrounds, including a huge horse show. So parking sucked. And then the Gopher game was going on. So,
and the Vikings.
But they were using the parking.
Vikings are today. What do I know?
Well, you know more. You watch more football than I do. But they were using the normal parking to shuttle people over to the Gopher game. So that was busy. Plus, there were a lot of things going on at the fairgrounds. So parking was tough. The actual attendance, in my opinion, was somewhere between the first and second day, kind of like a midday. Most of the people I talked to, they were saying sales were okay. There was nobody that was fantastic. And it was fun to see a lot of people. I saw Gordon Purcell. I saw Tim from Granite City. Bringlock. I can't think of the guy from Remix. He was there. The guy you talk about up in Forest Lake. Saw Tim from Issues Needed. There were a lot of dealers, a lot of fun, a lot of cool stuff. The one thing I saw, there were two big things I saw. The first thing I saw was a McFarlane Yellow Submarine box set that had the Yellow Submarine and all the characters around it. I don't ever recall seeing this. $75. The other thing I saw, when Todd McFarlane launched that Spawn Universe, he did a signed issue that hit eBay like a tornado. And Tim told me it was like you had to buy like 300 issues. And this is a $6 book. So this is a lot of cash for a normal comic. And you got one of those that was signed, autographed by Todd McFarlane. You can go right now to eBay and look them up. The unslabbed ones are going for $700. The slab ones are going for $1,800 and above. Nerding Out has one. It's in their Rochester store. And I'm real tempted to crack out the credit card and go for it. But then again, it was one of those things like maybe I was just impressed to actually see one. Talking with Tim, they didn't go for it. They decided they weren't into it. But it was kind of neat to see that. So if you are into one, you know to give Nerding Out a call down there. They were asking $900 for it. And again, they weren't sure if they were going to keep it raw or slab it. So that was crazy. Just a sidebar, the one thing I didn't see that I thought I might, Hasbro sent their first Kickstarter type toy. It was a Sentinel that's about 3 feet tall from the X-Men. Dan Wiesemeyer, our buddy who used to own Hot Comics and done all sorts of stuff, had his one and opened it and showed it, and he has it on his shelf of toys. So if you're friends with Dan, other than, you know, being a great guy, go take a peek. They are going for $2,000 on eBay. I think when they first came, you were only allowed to buy two. I thought for certain I would see somebody with one. Nobody has one. And again, when these came, I don't even know if I talked about these on the podcast. I know we've talked about the Galactus one that just closed, but who knew? I mean, I knew, I just didn't have the money, $500 to drop on one or two of them. And the Galactus figures were the same way. They're $500. They're going to come out next year. They let you buy five of them. So maybe the price won't go as crazy, but it still would have been cool to see one out in the wild. Other than on eBay, I don't think you'll see it. Lisa did wonderful.
Good.
She sold a ton of stuff. I don't know if she – I think she did a good deal. She had the same thing. She said, like, I think, like, five loads out, two loads back. Still has a lot of stuff. And when she's ready, we're going to get together, and I'll let you guys know. I'll be podcast – or pod eBaying it and having some fun. Sorry, my eBay shut down. I did meet some guys at another podcast. You know what? Scratch that. I'll have to find this stuff while you're talking, Corey, because I actually met up with some guys in another podcast, and we took a couple pictures, but we didn't exchange information. I never got over to them to actually join their podcast. And of course, I cannot for the life of me find the piece of paper I had that all their information. I gave them one of our flyers. So, well. So I'll find that while you're doing your talk. All right. I lost my train of thought.
Your train of thought derailed.
It did. And in conclusion, it was a fun con. I had a good time. It was good seeing everybody, people I haven't seen in a while. Not heavily attended. I think for all the reasons you talked about, Corey, and some of the ones I talked about, by the time this here podcast drops, Twin City Con will be in the book. I don't know if I'm going. If I go, it'll only be on Sunday. And then, of course, Nerding Out's a couple weeks from then. All online. You can look them up.
Was Bunkhouse Butch there?
No Butch. No sighting of the Butch. I don't know if he didn't go or didn't know. A lot of people were saying they were surprised. I think people who aren't plugged into social media got kind of left behind. Because if you don't go to a comic shop normally and pick up a flyer, or because they don't have an email list going. I don't know if that was something that evaporated when Nick passed away. But hopefully they get something going. They did not do the creator room. They didn't use the second floor. There was no food gathering. There was no grab bag. A lot of this is pandemic related because they just didn't have the people. They didn't know who wanted to take the food, didn't have the time to put everything together. Talking with Kelly, I think he was satisfied. I think everybody did well. Or I should say, like I said, people I talked to, everybody okay. But as far as the charity booth go, I think other than not having you there, Corey, or my girls by my side, my daughters, Holly and Dana, we had a good blowout. We had a good run. What did we do that? 7 years?
Oh, longer than that.
I don't even want to think.
It's been going since at least 2008.
Yeah. So we've done that.
So that's 13 years.
13 years.
Oh, that's why. That's why. 13.
Yeah, bad number. Oh, it's over. We're not going to do it.
It's over, Johnny.
It's over. Got other things we're going to do. I don't know if they're going to do an MCBA store. I might go back to just taking pictures. There wasn't anybody really taking tons of pictures.
Yeah, Gwen wasn't there this year, I heard.
No, she usually does the pictures. So I may go back, and that may be my mode. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But I know the people who went had a good time, a lot of good deals. I'm seeing people post things online, you know, like, here's my feed, here's what I found, and a lot of good books. So good time was had by all. Well done, Kelly, Eric, and all the gang. So while they're busy in Odin's sleep, we'll definitely let you know when the next one comes about.
Well, I have two omnibuses that I've been reading, because last week I really had no time from Sunday night till Friday night. I was either at work, sleeping at work, or driving to work, or covering wrestling. So I really had no personal downtime at all. I really overscheduled myself.
On his way to, I better not do that. We'll get sued for copyright infringement.
So Saturday, I read comics. It was National Comic Book Day Saturday. And
it was also National Daughter Day.
Yeah, I don't have
it
one
was all,
of those.
It was all sorts of things. Well, you know, have a look. Kind
yeah,
of your,
but foster daughter. But I celebrate Comic Book Day. Every day. All day, every day. So I thought I would talk a little about a omnibus that I have in my hand right now that is probably one of the lower selling omnibuses. It has a probably incredibly limited audience. But it's, to me, one of the most fascinating, and that is August 1961. August 1961 was the month that Fantastic Four number one came out. 60 years ago. I'm not going to talk about how close my birth was to that, but it's everything that came out that month and a few of the things that came out the next month. Now, the first thing I want to point out is in August, you had the last issue of Amazing Adventures. Now, Amazing Adventures had Marvel's first Silver Age superhero in it. Joe, who was Marvel's first Super Age superhero? Hello?
Marvel? I would assume it's considered Fantastic Four.
Nope. Who was before Fantastic Four by about 8-9 months?
I don't even know.
Dr. Droom.
Fake!
Who became Dr. Druid. That was part of one of the worst stories of Avengers history. Yeah. But he had already been booted from Amazing Adventures, I believe. I'm going to double check here. Yep, he had been booted from Amazing Adventures. He was only in the first 5 issues. And instead, it had become a kind of one of the typical late 50s monster books with Serpo, the creature who crushed the earth, by Kirby. The next story was The Fourth Man by Steve Ditko. And then the last story was the Dr. Droom, but boy, it sure doesn't look like it. It's Dr. Droom defeats the menace called Krog. And it's actually Stan just delivered the plot. His brother, Larry Lieber, did the dialogue. And Paul Reinman, who most people don't know, the art for it. It is incredibly short. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pages. And it doesn't even really show Dr. Droom in it very much. It almost just looks like a regular monster story. And they might have redrawn him to be the protagonist. But it's mostly about a space alien. But then the next issue was Amazing Adult Fantasy, which was, let's see, it says here, the magazine that respects your intelligence. And it was all Lee Ditko twist ending stories. And one of the things that has been in Marvel lore forever was that Stan was sick of working in comics and wanted to do other stuff. And the thing was, he was doing some other stuff under Martin Goodman. He had put out a book or two where they would take pictures from the AP and The Wire, and he would write funny dialogue in them. And that was something a lot of magazines and comics and books were doing. And he'd done a bunch of golf jokes And it's weird because when you think Stan Lee, you don't think golf, but he'd put out a book of golf jokes. But he had told his wife he was sick of doing comics and wanted to do something else. And he had saved his real name, Stanley Lieber, for the great American novel. And as the lore goes, his wife said, well, why don't you do something that you like, something you'd be proud of? And Stan always attached that to the Fantastic Four. Then there was also the story that Martin Goodman was playing golf with the head of DC, which would never happen because the head of DC thought that the guy who published Mail and Stag and Men's Adventures was a dirtbag. It's much more likely that Goodman heard from the distributor, hey, you know, that Justice League book is selling really, really well. And Goodman called Stan up and said, hey, superheroes are back. I want a superhero team. And that's how the Fantastic Four was born. But I think the more I read about what was going on at the time, the more I think Amazing Adult Fantasy was Stan saying, I'm going to do the stuff that I'm proud of. Because it's a completely different trade dress, completely different look. It's all Ditko, and he loved Ditko's twist stories. And Ditko inked everything himself. But the cover, just the magazine that respects your intelligence, the fact that it's Amazing Adult Fantasy. It lists all five stories, five fantastic thrillers for the more mature reader. The Last Man on Earth, The Icy Fingers of Fear, Journey's End, Why Won't They Believe Me, and Witch Hunt. And then the splash page is a contents page, which at the bottom, it says stories and art. Stan Lee and S. Ditko, the magazine that respects your intelligence. So those are the two things that I find really fascinating, how that book just kind of turned on a dime. And let's see, there were eight books that were either romance books or Archie knockoff humor books featuring female leads out of 19. So almost half of the stuff Marvel was putting out were, quote, comics for girls. They had three Westerns. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven monster books, and then the Fantastic Four. So, really, and the other thing is, we think, oh, it's Ditko and Kirby and Don Heck, but Paul Reinman was still around from the Atlas days. Al Hartley was still around from the Atlas days. Dan DiCarlo, who's mostly known for his Archie stuff, was doing work on the humor books, looking very different from the stuff he did. And Al Hartley drew as many stories as Jack Kirby did in this book. So Al Hartley kind of cranking out the stuff. His art is much simpler and relies a lot on stock poses. I mean, amazingly, it's like Linda Carter, student nurse. I swear they use the exact same face in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 panels in a 5-page story. The exact same, you know, the 3-quarter face with the expression that it looks like he just did a photostat and pasted it down. Kind of like how Wally Wood used to say, don't draw something you can copy. Don't draw something you can trace. Don't trace something you can copy. And don't copy something that you could just cut out and paste up. So that was part of my comic reading. Out of the books, the humor books were, if you read Marvel's humor books in 1961, you can see where Stan's jokes for the Marvel Universe came from, because it's that still kind of cornball stuff that Stan really liked. you know, the wisecracking character, the straight man who doesn't quite know what's going on. It's very clear that he loved the Marx Brothers because one of the characters would always kind of be like Groucho, and the other character would be a lot like Margaret Dumont, who just was confused and played it off as if she didn't know what the hell Groucho was saying. Will I recommend this? If you're really interested in this sort of thing, I find it fascinating. But I imagine your average run-of-the-mill comic fan would look at it and go, why the hell do I want to read Gunsmoke Western drawn by Don Heck in 1961? So, Joe, what else you been up to?
That's pretty much it. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things going on. Like one of them I discovered when I was talking about running around the Twin Cities dropping off con flyers. I talked to a few dealers. They said they seem to be having problems getting comic supplies. And I don't know.
Now, I have heard that there are issues in books getting to shops, but I had not heard that there were issues with comic supplies. But I'm not a big comic supply person.
Yeah, they're just saying they're having trouble ordering it. And a lot of that could just tie in to just the world trying to recover from COVID. You know, also demand is up there, and I'm reading reports where like Hasbro's offering to recycle toys because they don't have the raw material to make more toys. Hot Wheels shelves are bare. There's like, you go in, there's no Hot Wheels because they can't get them overseas. They don't have enough material to make it. They have too many cargo ships that can't be unloaded. They don't have enough ships to bring empty cargo tins back. And by cargo ships, I'm talking those huge Titanic ships where they just throw all your toys into a steel bin, ship them over to the United States, and then put them on trucks or rail cars and then ship them out to other places. I forget the year, but in when Todd McFarlane toys were going really hard, they had a ship that had problems and ended up dumping a bunch of not on purpose, but some of Todd's toys got lost at sea because the container ship just fell over and lost the containers that his toys were in. So he's like, well, this lot is going to be late. We got more coming, but don't worry about it. So I don't know if that's all over, but if you do see bags and boards and you want them, now's probably the time to grab them. Because, I mean, again, there's other more serious shortages, you know, computer chips for cars, phones, computers, things like that. Other than that, the only other thing that caught my eye, and I wanted to get your reaction to it, Corey, the heirs of Ditko apparently applying to get their trademark back on some of the things that Ditko had made. The feedback I saw was mostly creators really puzzled that so many people seem to be sticking up for Disney. You know, like, oh, they just want a piece of the action. They're not worth it. How dare they take money from Disney? Which I thought is always an odd reaction for a billion-dollar multinational company. Have you, I know you're big on, you know more about Ditko. Any thoughts you had on that?
I have a few. Now, I have always said from day one of learning that human beings make comics, and for the most part, they just get a page rate. I mean, when you look at Don McGregor's page rate for Jungle Action, when he was doing Black Panther in Jungle Action, it's like he got $35 a page. And think of the millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars Marvel and Disney and everybody else has made off the stuff that he added to Black Panther that was in the movie. Wakanda was the, you know, Kirby created it, but it was more kind of a throwaway thing. And he only did those few stories in the Fantastic Four. And then Roy Thomas brought him into the Avengers and was like, yeah, we're getting rid of the whole king in Africa stuff because, boy, it makes it really hard for him to hang out with the Avengers. And Don McGregor put him back there and really built a lot of the mythology of Wakanda.
You know, I always find it interesting, too, especially with a lot of these movie guys. They're talking about how when Disney is acknowledging their contributions to these, you know, billion-dollar franchises, it's often, here's a movie ticket and $5,000, if even that.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not even, you're like, well, was it Starlin or somebody was reporting, I didn't even get the seat in the main theater. I ended up in, like, an overflow theater.
Yeah. Or over at DC, when Paul Levitz was in charge, he would make sure that people would get paid if their ideas were used in the movies. Len Wein said he got more for Lucius Fox in the first Batman Begins than he ever made on Wolverine. And, well, Len was involved in the creation of Wolverine, but there are so many hands in that pie. It's messy. And that's the other thing about creators. Before they had a system of when you create a character, you fill out a form at Marvel. I created this character, blah, blah, blah. Rob Liefeld talks a lot about that for, you know, he gets royalty checks for when his characters are used, because that was the agreement they had in the late 80s. Steve Ditko is a very odd circumstance, because one of the things that a lot of people are saying is, well, we don't know what Ditko would have wanted. And Ditko would have wanted his family to blah, blah, blah. We know what Ditko wanted. We know absolutely what Ditko wanted, because, Joe, you've got some of the self-published Ditko stuff. There aren't comics. They're essays. Some of them are illustrated essays, but they're essays. And in it, his philosophy was very much, I entered into a contract. And when I entered into that contract, they said they would pay me this much money when I delivered this. Once I delivered that and they gave me a check, our contract was completed. He did leave Marvel over royalties, but it wasn't that he wasn't being paid royalties. It was that Martin Goodman had said they would renegotiate the contract for him to get royalties on, you know, this was 1965, 66, the Spider-Man pillows and the Spider-Man shirts and Spider-Man cartoons and stuff like that. But Goodman never offered him the deal. Because Goodman lied constantly about shit like that. And he left. And he has written an essay about the creation of Spider-Man and how, yes, Kirby created a Spider-Man character, but none of those elements were used when the Spider-Man story was complete. He also doesn't come right out and say it, but it's if you read his stuff and you look at the job numbers and you do your research, it was really clear Spider-Man was going to become the lead character in Amazing Fantasy. They would still have the backup stories. And that's why Spider-Man 1 and 2 are two stories in one issue. They were created for future issues of Amazing Fantasy that never saw the light of day. Ditko said very clearly he didn't want royalties. He didn't feel that he had signed a deal for royalties. Now, there is a rumor that when the Spider-Man movie came out and subsequent movies came out, Marvel gave him quite a large check. And I have heard both that he cashed it so that he could live very comfortably in his rent-controlled apartment for the rest of his life. I've also heard that he didn't cash it. I'm leaning toward that he cashed it.
I heard that a neighbor got a hold of one of the checks and said, you make quite a lot of money.
And, you know, he wasn't really working anymore because he was in his late 80s. So he was able to keep his apartment. Now, the thing is, one of his nephews, Mark Ditko, is very active on Facebook. He runs the Ditko site. Is just starting some merchandising with shirts and mugs and we'll have other things available, including the Ditko self-published stuff and books. And he's actually kind of, he's iffy about whether he wants to put him in books or not, because Steve said while he was alive, he didn't want his stuff collected in those books. They were made for 32 page packages or 48 page packages, but he is wanting to go against Steve's will on that, just so that it would be easier to market and sell and get into stores. And he has been very silent about this. He is not the one behind the lawsuit. Now, do I think that companies, when Bill Mantlow, from what I hear, Disney was very good to him and gave him enough money so that he is taken care of at a care facility, much like the group homes I work at, for the rest of his life. I know that they have helped out other creators who were involved in the Silver Age who are no longer with us. Now, here's the thing. They are not beholden to do that to anybody. You sign a contract. The contract says you will deliver these pages for this dollar amount. Once we get to the 80s, it was when you create this character, you will get royalties from that. Now, I don't know if it is that much, but most comic creators, they will talk very openly about, I'm not going to create characters for Marvel or DC because I want to own them. And when I work for Marvel and DC, I will play with their toys. And then when I do my creator-owned stuff, that's where I will create my new characters. And there are some people like James Tynion IV who are like, well, I'm working on Batman, so I think it's okay if I create Batman derived characters under this deal, but anything that I create on my own, I'm keeping for myself. So many of the current creators are very savvy to how it works. In the 60s and 70s, no one gave a shit because they never thought there would be movies. They thought maybe we'll get a crappy TV show like the Spider-Man show. So on the Ditko suit itself, I would want to know who the relatives are. And it's a separate case to me from other creators, because we have Ditko's writing where he says, I created this and I fulfilled my contract. Personally, that's what he believed. Now, do I think that there is more than enough money to spread around? Oh, hell yes. I am a Disney shareholder. They make ginormous amounts of profit. Even with nobody going to movie theaters anymore, I think it is perfectly fine for the relatives to get a piece of that pie. Just like the Kirby heirs. The Kirby heirs suit against Marvel and Disney went all the way to the Supreme Court and settled beforehand. Marvel settled it because the lawyers were rolling the dice here. Over at DC, the Siegel and Schuster heirs have put together a deal where, yes, DC has Superman and Batman, but they have to pay a royalty fee for characters like Superboy and Supergirl, et cetera, who the family has an interest in. And you will see, I forget the exact verbiage, but it's something like license from the estate of, or created by, et cetera, et cetera. For the actual comics, there's not a lot of money there. But when something goes to toys and movies and streaming shows and everything like that, there's more than enough money to give money to the creators. And creators have to fight. Joe, how much money did William Shatner make off Star Trek from 1972 to 1978 before the first movie came out?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing, because the deal at the time was you get paid your initial fee and then you get paid for the first three reruns and that's it.
Yeah, syndication was not a big thing yet. Not as big as it had been.
Well, syndication wasn't. There wasn't money in it.
No. I mean, you look at the TV guide from back then. We had PBS, PBS's hard-to-receive little brother, Channel 17, ABC, NBC, CBS, and one affiliate. And that was, they would run Tom and Jerry in the afternoon, Hanna-Barbera. They were always looking for shows to run. Initially, it was Channel 11, and then there was a big kerfluffle when ABC became number one, and they changed affiliates, and then Channel 9 became that. So that's where I watched Star Trek. They would run it every day at 6 o'clock, and I don't recall what they run. When I find old newspapers as I'm digging through stuff, it's fascinating to watch this because everything shut off at midnight or 1 o'clock. And started up again at 5, well, usually right before 6. And you just had those three channels. Every so often, a UHF channel would pop up. And regardless what Weird Al says, they weren't that successful. You read accounts of the first Star Trek con where these guys are kind of like, hey, people are kind of digging this still. But, you know, William Shatner's talked about a lot of his books. He went out and did Summerstock. He did kept working. He kept doing those movies we laugh at him for. He did a few really good ones. There was the one where he was, brain fart. It was about the, Civil War trials. I'll have to Google it sometime. But really, he didn't make, and McCoy and I'm saying their character's name. DeForest Kelly, Leonard Nimoy, they didn't really make their money until the movies hit. And he started doing things he wanted to do.
With the movies, Leonard Nimoy is the one who pushed this. They renegotiated the syndication deal in the movie contract. It's like, okay, yeah, we'll be in the movie and we'll take this fee, but we also want syndication fees for Star Trek still running. So in a lot of ways, the Star Trek movies were kind of used as a crowbar to get more money out of Paramount, which had bought Desilu, which were the creators. But now, you know, you've got all these different ways that TV and stuff are put out, and the people who are on it are like, hey, you're generating all this revenue and you're saying my contract doesn't cover streaming, or my contract doesn't cover when it's on a streaming service owned by the people who own the show. That was one of the big things with the X-Files when it went to FXX. Duchovny and Gillian Anderson sued, saying, you know, if you would have sold it to TBS or TNT or USA, you would have gotten more money. Instead, you're running it on FX for free so that we're cut out of any royalties. Or WKRP in Cincinnati, Cold Case. These are shows where they bought the music rights. Drew Carey shows, another one. They bought the music rights, but they didn't buy it for DVD or streaming. And the people who own those music rights are like, hey, you want to put this out on Netflix? Cool. Cough up the money. There's about to be another strike with people who work on TV and movies saying, hey, we're not getting our cut of the streaming. Because when it's shown in syndication, when it's shown on cable, we get our cut. But because streaming wasn't in the initial contract, because streaming didn't exist when we signed the initial contract, we're not getting anything for it. We're not going to make any new stuff until we're part of that. And with comics, a lot of people are very much in the, oh my God, I'm just so happy to be here.
Yeah.
That they don't look at their contracts other very much. There are some people who are, you know, they have a lot of stroke. Brian Michael Bendis, Ed Brubaker. Ed Brubaker said he's never going to work for Marvel or DC again because no matter, you know, he got $5,000 for Winter Soldier. but also because he makes more money on low selling books that he owns. And if he is able to cut a deal for one book, that's more money than he would have made for under contract for Marvel for a year. Greg Rucka, same thing. He went over to DC as a favor to Brian Michael Bendis, but he only did the one miniseries and kept doing the stuff. Why? Because Old Guard, one of his books at Image, got picked up by Netflix for a movie. And he said he made more on that movie than he did all his time at Marvel. There's no money in comics. It's all from the licensing. It's all from when it goes to other media. And DC's movies and Marvel's movies do what I've said that they are going to do, and that is they go through the comics to grab ideas. They're an idea farm. That's why Vertigo stayed around as long as it did, even though Vertigo never really made a lot of money other than the Sandman and Preacher trades. The rest just kind of barely broke even. But they were an idea farm for DC. And the comics are an idea farm for Marvel and DC. And I think people need to get paid for those ideas. Now, one thing Disney has done in response to the Ditko suit, I don't know if you read about this, they're preemptively suing a lot of the creators and their estates, saying, we don't want you to ever do this.
To sue or to get money?
To sue. They don't want them to sue. It's like, we're preemptively suing you so that you can't sue us. So, and the House of Mouse has a lot of pull. The copyright laws in the U.S. were literally written by the Disney Corporation to make sure that Mickey Mouse does not go public domain.
Yeah, and we've already heard stories. We talked about how I think Alan Dean Foster is certainly discovering that, he doesn't get any more money for all the Star Wars books he wrote previously because Disney doesn't consider that he's owed anything.
And, they believe that when they bought Lucasfilm, the deal he had was null and void. Yeah. Now, they have
since. Which isn't right.
They have since gone back and changed that.
Yeah, so once they get publicity against them, because that would get stockholders nervous. And again, Corey and I are both stockholders. We could bring it up at a meeting if we chose to listen in. Like, hey, why are these guys who wrote for you suddenly upset because you're not paying them for what?
Why are you breaking contracts?
Yeah, this doesn't seem right.
People that you're doing, that people who work for these entities in the past. So
and maybe we will.
There are people that I am friends with on Facebook who are not just legal people, but they are involved with the government. So they're involved in writing these laws. And the one guy I know, I'm going to actually pull up what he wrote. He has asked that his name not be used. Joe, entertain the people while I pull this up.
All right. Let's see. What can I talk? What can I possibly talk about? Oh, I know what I could talk about. I was, as part of the whole thing with the MCBA, I've been trying to get my basement and my garage in order because it's kind of like, imagine if you will, let's take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 boxes that have all my eBay stuff in it that's actually on eBay. Now imagine I've got, 4,000 or 5,000 square feet of stuff I have yet to get on eBay. Part of what we're doing is we're trying to organize it. You know, we talked about the books I gave. I got my graphic novels organized. It's something like I do every couple of years. I mean, you guys have heard it on a podcast. The great graphic novel purge, the great comic book purge. Anyways, we got a storage bin. And as part of that, we moved everything from the charity booth I didn't sell. It's in the charity booth. One of the things that sold that cracked the hell out of me up, my dad gave me about 50 frames. They range from little tiny, 5x4 frames to huge picture frames. One of them was a clock with the Last Supper in it. Some of them were like ski pictures where despair, where the guy's looking down, he's on a chairlift, he dropped a ski. A lot of them were golf frames. A lot of them were just empty. Why did my dad have all these frames? Well, he had things he wanted to put in them. What I thought, well, first of all, dad dumped them on me because he's like, well, you could probably put them on eBay. I go, well, problem is they're heavy. They're good frames. I mean, you go to your favorite hobby shop and buy these for probably $20 to $50, if not more. So I brought them to the con and I just laid them out on the table. Frames, $5 a piece. It didn't matter if this thing was 4 feet by 8 feet. You want it, you buy it. The only one I asked $10 for was when my daughter gave me that had Doctor Who in it. And by the end of the con, I went from having 50 frames to maybe 6.
Cool.
And I, you know, again, we dropped them. We did them for $1. A few people I just gave them to. But my wife was laughing her ass off. She, I would never believe they would sell. And I said, well, they do because a lot of comic guys like to frame their stuff. And the problem was, is you never know what they want. I talked to the one guy at Rockhopper Comics in New Hope, and he's framing his comic posters, and they look really cool. He picks up the frames, $5 to $10 at Target. Problem is, and again, this might tie into the whole shortage supply thing, he can't get the frames fast enough to do the posters. And, you know, I've got a garage full of posters I would love to sell. So, anyways, it was just kind of a fun thing. Christmas surprise. There's, like I said, the ones that are left over, I'm just going to bring to the Goodwill tomorrow. But part of what we're doing is, you know, I'm just moving stuff. All the books that I kept, not my graphic novels, but the books. And these are wrestling books. These are Beatle books. These are autobiographies I haven't read. Some of them are coffee table books from like when I visited the Titanic exhibit when they brought their artifacts here years ago. Books I just don't know what to do with. And Chris doesn't know what to do with, but these aren't books that I want to get rid of because I would have done it already. Put them in a bin, put them in a storage bin. We got a great deal on a 10 by 30 bin, climate controlled. So, and I'm going to wait till I get to geeking because as I'm going through things, I'm discovering things that are kind of fun. And I'll talk about some of them as we get to it. But is that enough entertainment, Corey?
Yes.
All right.
All right. I've seen a lot of armchair lawyering analyzing the Ditko lawsuit, especially applying the work for hire doctrine to the work Ditko did. However, all of these arguments are based on work for hire as it is understood under the 1976 Copyright Act. The Ditko case will be examined under the 1909 Copyright Act because he didn't work for Marvel creating new stuff after 1976. So his agreement with Marvel was under the 1909 Copyright Act. The test for work for hire was much different under that act. There actually wasn't a work for hire doctrine in the 1909 Act. Instead, a court, like the one who decided the Kirby case, will look at the level of control and approval. Kirby lost because Stan Lee's testimony about the Marvel method and their working arrangement was enough to establish Marvel's control over the work. Why? Well, Stan was just a writer. No, Stan was editorial. He was salaried. He was on staff. Although I'm not going to armchair quarterback this in detail, I think the bottom line is, while one can never really predict what will happen in court, I'm pretty sure that if Kirby's heirs couldn't prevail, Ditko's heirs probably wouldn't either. Although Marvel settled with Kirby's heirs after the Supreme Court said they would consider taking up Kirby's loss. So maybe they will settle again. As a litigator, I'm also interested to see how this case will be developed, who the witnesses would be in the cases, given that anyone who had anything to do with or firsthand knowledge of Ditko's employment is long gone. I assume the lawyers will have to do entity depositions. If you want to sound smart, where the company has to teach a witness what happened so they can testify on specified topics. Alternately, they could try to use experts and historians to build their case, but this strategy didn't go over well in the Kirby case, and the experts were struck from testimony. So that's one of my friends who's a lawyer, who's really smart on this sort of thing, has said about it. I don't know if Ditko's heirs even have standing. As we know, Ditko never married, never had any children. So these are grandnieces and grandnephews. Kirby has children who are still alive, children and grandchildren. Ditko does not. So it's going to be a messy case for the people who say, oh, they're just greedy. No, they're taking advantage of a clause in the law that says after a certain time, you can take back your copyrights. And if it's in the law, why not use it? So this is something that will be developing over the long haul. I know that the Kirby heirs actually have used it to create Kirby, basically to create kind of a Kirby boxes and a Kirby website, and go through all of the stuff that Kirby had to restore it, to store it properly, and, you know, to make sure that the children are taken care of, because one of the things about Kirby was he wanted his children and grandchildren taken care of. That's why he drew so much. It's why he fought so hard for the contracts he got. It's why he stayed at the drawing board for hours at a time. It's why he wanted the original art back. He wanted the sales for that to go toward taking care of his wife, Roz, and his children so that they never had to worry about money the way he did when he was a child. So there are my thoughts, Joe. Is that complicated enough?
No, I think we got it covered. And, of course, if we hear anything new, we'll let you know. We're just reporting what other people do.
And we also talk about things that other people can do for our listeners, such as protect them when they're on the internet. Here's our sponsor, NordVPN. Our newest sponsor is NordVPN. Let's be honest. If you're out on the internet, you need a VPN to protect you. There's all sorts of things going on the internet where people can track you. You could accidentally download a keylogger. All sorts of things. NordVPN gives the best security possible. It has a password manager, which generates complex passwords, syncs across all your devices, stores your notes and credit card information. It also gives you 10 gigabytes of private cloud storage, secure files. It backs up your data automatically. But the main thing it gives you is peace of mind. It gives you peace of mind when you're out on the internet, when you're streaming, when you're playing games, when you're listening to podcasts like this one. It gives you safety anywhere at any time. It protects your online activity. You get full access to all content. And if you use the link go.nordvpn.net/SH3KU, it'll take you to where you can get a great deal for a 1 month plan, a 2 year plan, a 1 year plan. They are our newest sponsor. We're happy to have them. And if you would like to sponsor something here at any of the podcasts on the Solitaire Rose Network, you can. Just email me, solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks. And I keep busy with other podcasts that I do, like these. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, these solo radio podcasts that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four, four issues at a time, to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at pwinsiderelite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at pwinsiderelite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now we get to Joe's favorite part of the show.
Oh, we're going to another Comic-Con.
No. This is Joe. What's going on the eBays?
Well, actually, things have been going pretty good. There's nothing new. One of the things I like to do on eBays is if I sell something or I discover something that's really, really cool, I like to talk about it. Not a lot of that's happened. I've been selling things that I've picked up. Uncanny X-Men 320 had both the regular and then there was a Wizard Gold variant cover way back in 1995. Gold valuable. Some of the things I talked about, White Tribe Volume 1, that was the Larry Stroman, his series from Image. I sold, where did this go? It says it's international, but I don't think it was. Take a look. No. For some reason, eBay thought New Hampshire was international. But I had a book called I Speak Basic to My Commodore 64. All the way back from 1984. Sold for $17. I'm like, hey, you know, that would have been one of the books I would have tossed. But it occurred to me somebody somewhere is a Commodore 64-aholic. What got me thinking is there's a guy who bought all the Atari stuff left up in the universe when Atari went out of business. And he's a bit of a persnickety guy because if you piss him off, you will never get a piece for your Atari equipment. And he doesn't computerize anything. He doesn't advertise websites. You got to call him between certain hours, certain days. You almost want to buy all this crap and just say, dude, go retire. Get out of here. Let's give it to somebody who loves it. On the other hand, he's also running out of parts, so maybe he'll disappear on his own. But it was just silly stuff. What isn't silly is the fact that I have all sorts of stuff I'm going to put on the eBays. So be looking over the next couple weeks because I pretty much, like I said, I eliminated all the low stuff that, you know, cost me more in shipping. I've got all these cool variants. I've got some other fun things. And as I slowly weed through my wild collection of stuff, I will find other treasures, and you know they'll go right to the eBays. And one thing I discovered, Corey, do you remember a comic strip? I think it was heavy metal, called The Bus by Paul Kirchner.
Oh, that was, yeah. I didn't see it in heavy metal. I saw it in something else, but I don't remember what.
Because it was, I think it was a heavy metal, and then he did it on his own. Did you know he's selling copies of his graphic novel for close to cover price on the eBays?
No.
Yeah. Autographed. And one of them, he says he'll even autograph a picture of the bus. If you look for The Bus, Paul Kircher, K-I-R-C-H-N-E-R, you'll find it pop up. And believe me, as soon as this podcast is over, I'm going to order one of each. He's got the original The Bus and The Bus 2. And it's I get a kick out of buying stuff from the author. You'll see it. It'll say The Bus signed and sold by the author. And these were published originally. The first one was back in 2012. The second one's 2015. I had a copy of The Bus I was going to sell. I thought, well, let's see what it goes for. And it's like, why would somebody buy my copy for $20 when you can buy it from Paul himself? Mention it. You heard it on this here podcast. By the way, I sold my copy for $10. Somebody was very happy. I just said, you know what? Let's half price it. Somebody just want to read it. And like I said, I'm just going to replace mine with signed and sold copies from the author. So that was kind of fun. And if you didn't know that, well,
now you know.
Now you do. In the meantime, what I'm putting up, you know what to do. I'm mentioning you listen to this here podcast. I'll send you. I've got tons of stuff to give away. So just, you know where to go. K-R-A-Y-Z. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where Joe goes down a list of all the omnibuses that Steve Brown, Man of Renown, had at his booth.
Oh, it was good.
No, it's Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I cheated on you with another podcast.
After you gave me so much shit for that.
Yeah, I figured. Isn't that how it happens with couples? I have to get a revenge on you? It wasn't so much that I was on a podcast.
I don't care that you go to other podcasts. I think it's good for our show.
And it was. And I'm going to mention these guys. It wasn't actually on their podcast because I was stuck at the charity booth, so I couldn't get away. But one of the guys who does the podcast, Ernest Briggs IV, came over and we got a couple pictures. I actually just tagged you on it so you can go take a look at it. So I thought that was nice. I gave him a copy of the flyer and I said, you know, we're going to mention your podcast and maybe one of these days we can coordinate and have a podcast crossover with that other podcast show. If you go to podcastics.com or just Google them, they're on Facebook. You can check out what they're talking about because the last podcast they did, and they what I love is they put on it, it says this is a very long vacation. And the brothers were on vacation. They're getting ready to do a season 3 drop. And the last episode they posted, PC2.11, they're talking about what they'll be looking forward to or looking for at the MSP Fall Con. What are the books they're looking for? Will they be cosplaying? He cosplayed as a giant hamburger, by the way. And what are the comic book convention tips for a great show? So go over, check them out after you listen to us, of course, and mention it that you heard it here on this here podcast. And like I said, I'll probably contact Ernest and Daniel A. Briggs, the brother. And in the meantime, check them out. I found them on the Minnesota Comic Exchange podcast, but they are also, I imagine they have their own Facebook page. But, you know, in this day and age of Google, we really don't have to drop, you know, www.podcast.com/podcast/episode/tops-pc-2, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know the drill. Just Google it. You'll find it. So I do not regret it, though, Corey. I do regret a lot of errors, but this one.
This was not an error.
And I thought it was cool. He came over to say hi. I told him, hey, come visit at the charity booth. And it was fun. So that, again, this it could have been a freaking, but it's really a geeking because I don't really I might have things that bothered me. But I got to tell you, after going to the podcast, I was con and, you know, cleaning out some stuff and I'm feeling good. Not limber. I mean, I'm still sore and, you know, the hips are going, why did you stand on concrete for 12 hours? What did we ever do to you? You know, I'm not young or limber, just feeling good. Corey, how about you? What you freaking out?
DC's put out their DC Connect, and once again, not jack or shit in the way of trade paperbacks or books. And boy, they sure are putting out a lot of Batman. And ugh, I wanted to like DC. I was all primed after the, we're bringing back the multiverse. And the books are just headache inducing. They're not going to have a good reprint policy because they want to drive everybody to the regular comics. It's very much, okay, I'll read it on the app. When they show up on the app, I'll read it. Unlike Marvel, which says 3 months and they're on the app, DC is much more haphazard about it. So it's more, okay, well, I like this creator, so I'll read his run. I like this creator and I'll read his run. And every so often, I just think how before the New 52, I was so excited about DC stuff. I was so excited about the direction they would go. They planned out their events fairly well, except for Countdown to Final Crisis, which, but boy, there was a time when DC was firing on all cylinders, and that time is long gone. Comic fans, I'm kind of irritated with. I'm usually irritated with comic fans, but with the Ditko suit, all the people who are screaming that, oh, these greedy creators. If there weren't any creators, you wouldn't have comics. And how would you like it if your work, let's say you're working at Industrial Widgets, and you create a new way to make those widgets while you're on your shift, making 17 an hour, and you design a new widget that changes everything about widgets, and the company makes a fortune off that, and they gave you nothing and didn't even guarantee your employment. Now, yes, that is the American way. The lady who created Post-it notes didn't get a bonus, didn't get anything extra. A lot of people who create stuff while they're working at their job. You know, when you're at a job, Joe, did you know while you work for TSA, let's say you in your downtime, you write a novel while you work for the TSA. Who owns that novel?
I guess the government does.
Yes, it does. Anything you do while you are on the clock is owned by your employer. So even if you do your own creative stuff, if you're doing it while you're at work, they are paying for your time and everything that you do on your time. And that has happened. There was a guy who was working for WCW back in the waning days of WCW and was writing a novel because there was nothing to do. You know, the company was not touring anymore. The shows were not selling tickets. He had a lot of downtime, wrote a novel, put it out, and he put in some of his interviews that he wrote it while he was working for. Guess what? Time Warner came knocking on his door, and he got into a whole big legal fight about that. So, comic creators, comic fans, everybody needs to start being more aware of rights and what's allowed and what's not. And the last thing I am freaking on is an offshoot of that, because there are a lot of people who say, well, yo, it's a capitalist society and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And Ditko knew what he was doing because he was a capitalist. And all these comic creators knew what they were doing because they're capitalists. And I wish people actually knew what capitalism was, because, Joe, you're not a capitalist.
Nope.
Because you don't own any capital.
Nope.
I'm not a capitalist. I don't own any capital. 90% of the people who do, well, we believe in capitalism, they're not capitalists. They don't own capital. They are part of a free market economy. But if you don't own capital, you're not a capitalist. And the people who do own capital have the control. So when I hear, well, capitalism is the best system there is. No, it's not. It's not even close. There are other systems that work better because they value the rights of the worker. They value the rights of those who don't own capital. But under a capitalist system, which the U.S. is not, founded as a capitalist system, is founded as a free market economy. Capitalism came much later because there was no capital in the early U.S. There was no stock market. Capital was created by the Dutch in the 1600s for the India East Trading Company, where they would sell shares of the India East Trading Company to raise money to build the boats to go and get the tea and the spices and everything from India and bring it back. People need to read up on this. They need to know their history. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Oh, I got all sorts of things I'm geeking on. As I said, I'm digging through stuff, looking for... Well, just trying to clear things out. I ran across what I call my note of destiny. And let me call it up here as I got. Here we go. I found other than stuff related to the shop. Well, I told Corey about one. I'll just mention. Back when I had Crazy Comics, Pete Krause was one of my customers. Pete Krause, the creator at the time, Power Shazam. He's gone on to do Irredeemable with Mark Krause. He's just a wonderful guy. Sent me a note and a check for the comics he was buying for me, and then drew a really cool Shazam head on it. And I ran across it, and it's like, this is why I just can't dump the stuff, because I'm going through things. First of all, I want to make sure if I've got anybody's credit cards or personal identifying information, I'm sending that to a shredder. If I can recycle something, I will. But there's things like that. Here's another one. The note that changed my life, and this is from my wife. At the time, I was working at the state fair. I was out of work. I'd sold the shop, and Nick basically brought me in. I was working, like I said, the 1919 Root Beer booth, and I got home, and my wife left me this note. Joe, TSA called. You are scheduled for orientation Sunday, September 1st, 8 a.m. Last 4 to 6 hours, Radisson South Hotel I didn't realize where it was. Bring your driver's license, social security card, and a blank check. Dress as business casual. That was over 18 years ago. And who knew how long it would go? I mean, it's just kind of, I'm not in a good place right now with TSA, but it was just kind of fun to see this. So naturally, I had to go and tell the guys at the Root Beer booth that I cannot stay. I have to go away. And they were cool about it. But then at the end, Nick would write out a 2002 Minnesota State Fair report. Basically, what they would do is you get a check for your services. You get a piece of the action because they divided up the sales amongst things. Some of it went to charity. A lot of it went to the employees. Checks are based on the hours you stated on your time card. If there's any problem, calling VisiFix. Here are the annual floaty awards, and I won one. I won the Gotta Go Uncle Sam Needs Me Award. So that was kind of fun. That was actually one of the cons that I only got to go to half of it, because the Saturday I was in orientation, and then Sunday I showed up. I took off my uniform and I went and got to play for a while. So, you know, I didn't make every show other than like when I was on the road and missing things. So that was kind of fun. And I'm going to be running into all sorts of stuff like that. And I'll share it with you as things go. As far as what I bought while at the con, I was actually fairly well behaved, mostly because my wife was there. Believe me, that was a big selling point. Most of it was, we're selling this stuff for charity. And as my wife will say, and she's right over there, better in your basement than mine. And you could always tell people with a sense of humor, because it usually got to chuckle out of them. But I did buy some things. Speaking of Omnibus, I got the Blackest Night Omnibus from Pat. He basically crossed it out to me. So now I've got the Geoff Johns Green Arrow in paperback. I got Brightest Day Omnibus. I got the Blackest Day Omnibus. So I think I got everything. I know when the New 52 hit, Sinestro had his own book. And that was one of the weird books that actually, when New 52 hit, the storyline continued. So I think I've got all of Geoff Johns' run, which is pretty cool. The other thing I bought, I ran into right across from me, was J. Jonathan Goltz. And as I look, he was selling his stuff. So what I did is I picked up some stuff. It's Gerbil, a.k.a. Hyde Jonathan Goltz. And you can check him out. His business is graybq@gmail.com. That's Gray, G-R-E-Y-B-Q. Pretty much online everywhere as Gerbil Fluff. And I've been looking at the book. And, you know, it's one of those things. You know, if I had unlimited cash, I would run around and buy something from every one independent person there. And I just watch, and it didn't look like a lot of people stopped. But He had one called Making Friends in the Afterworld. He wrote it. It's illustrated by Theo Lorenz and Lee Bowserself. Life is tough for little Amino. His parents are the reason why all the creatures called humans disappeared before he was born. And now everybody left in the afterworld is afraid of him. How's a kid supposed to find any friends around here? He autographed it. He put a date on it. He said, hey, I wrote this. Theo and Lee were not there. I'm just trying to look to see if they have any. Well, you'll probably have to get a hold of good old Gerbil Fluff himself to get a copy of it. But it looked kind of fun. I also picked up a he said this is a slightly happier book. His number one fan, a tiny book about terrible things and how I came out on the other side by Gerbil. And as $5, all profits made from the book, he was donating to Rain. And I don't know what the hell Rain is. Let's look it up.
Rain is the organization for women who have been sexually assaulted.
Ah, National Sexual Assault Hotline. Yes. Let me give it to you.
Mick Foley works with them, too.
1-800-656-4673. So I am very, very happy that I bought this from Hyde, a.k.a. Gerbil. And I will read these, and it'll probably return as we get to our reviews that we do every so often. I also picked up a book, Quit Being So Good, Stories of, crossed out, A Smart Nice Girl, An Unapologetic Woman by Christy Hemner. She was just there with somebody, and I figured it had, I looked at it and I said, is this, did you write this? Because she just had a picture of herself as a kid there. And I'm like, not making the mental connection between the kid and her. And we talked about that, and you know, talked about my daughters, how I'm doing the charity booth. They're not here. I miss them. So I bought this book. I had it autographed to them. It's to all those who have been told, quit being so good. This book is for you. Keep it up. Other women and girls are watching. Holly and Dana make more. And Christy signed it. So I'm going to read this. I'm going to give it to them. I only bought one so they can share. I'm, you know, I'm crazy, not rich. So I'm looking forward to that. I actually talked to Dana during the show, which was kind of fun. She called Chris. And I kind of said, I really miss doing this with you and Holly. But you know, Dana's in grad school. Holly's working full time. So that was kind of some bright stuff. And that was pretty much it. I mean, I really didn't buy much. I figured, you know, I've got a whole ton of these graphic novels and variant covers. And, you know, Kelly's like, yeah, take what you want. And I said, well, I'll probably be reading a few of them. We are cleaning out stuff. So that's making Chris happy. She can park in her garage again. Matter of fact, when we're done, I got like four huge heavy tubs that of the books I'm keeping. I haven't decided if I'm moving my graphic novels over there because they're out of the way. But I still got a table down here of all my wrestling books and all my books on comic books. And I got to buy more, too. Isn't Previews coming out soon? Oh, well,
yeah,
we'll
talk. Yeah, Previews will be in your next box day.
Oh, goody, goody, goody. I got the new interwebs going. Hopefully the sound is good. I can't wait to listen to the sound of the podcast. Hopefully not many interruptions. I can watch things without the interwebs killing me. The other thing, well, a couple of things. At the con, Joel Thingvold set up a display about David Mers, thank you. And he was basically a Minnesota legend. He had a bunch of his magazines he left over, his Animania, the Animated Film Quarterly. I picked up one of everything. I also picked up Joel's. He wrote a nice little thing about David. And Corey, when I'm done with these, I'm going to give these to you so you can read them because I think you'll get a kick out of it. Just kind of a nice thing. And of course, you can always go to the David Mers Memorial Minnesota Comic Book and Cartoonity Share Society on Facebook. Especially if you know David or you got something about the con to or just Minnesota comic books in general you want to share. I've just mentioned we put the podcast on it. I put the podcast I did with Pat about how we bought Hot Comics. I saw Jerome at the con. That was kind of awesome to see. The comic buyer's guide he donated, I gave to Joel Thingvall because Joel wants to go through it and dig out stuff from Minnesota-based stuff. So they're in good hands. So all in all, things are going well. I did actually read a couple comics. So I just want to share. I have a copy of the last Marvel team-up, Spider-Man and the Uncanny X-Men, and now A Moment's Silence Before the Action Begins. And this was basically a story with Spider-Man and four of the X-Men, Rogue, Colossus, Nightcrawler, and Rachel Summers at the time, who I don't know if she's calling herself Phoenix or not, but she had the Phoenix powers. And the gist of the story is that Juggernaut goes to get a gift for his buddy Tom Cassidy, who is a mutant, and he gives him the gem. How do you say it? Cyberrock? Cybertalk? You know, the gem that made him the Juggernaut. And Tom gets it. Cyberrock?
Who knows? Yeah, I'd have to. That's one where you go, okay, I know what it looks like.
You know what I'm talking about. But he gives it to Tom. Tom gets Juggernaut powers, and they both proceed to fight Spider-Man and the four X-Men that are there. And it was kind of a fun little romp. I mean, this occurred because Juggernaut says the only guy who ever slowed me down was Spider-Man. And it took a bunch of wet concrete to do it. That's my voice of Juggernaut. So that was a fun one to read. And, you know, again, it was the end of Marvel team up. I would love to see Marvel team up come back, but it could just be an old comic guy like me waxing nostalgia. Speaking of waxing nostalgia, I finally cracked open back issue number 128. Bronze Age TV tie-ins. And this, again, I absolutely love back issue comics because it reminds me, first of all, the comics I had that I've gotten away from. But a lot of these comics I collected because they had photo covers. Some of them are things that, like, I never discovered. I mean, I talked about finding a Primus comic book, and it was a TV show starring Robert Brown, and they interview Robert Brown, and even he's like, I don't know why they put me in it. It wasn't really a mismatch, kind of a mismatch. Some of them were comics I didn't know existed, like the Bugaloos. I didn't know Carlton did a Bugaloos comic, probably because it wasn't photo cover. But then as I go through it, I'm seeing like, okay, there's the photo cover, Banana Split, number one, Gold Key, Croft Super Show, number one, with Dark Shadows by Gold Key. Some of the ones we know about, like Marvel, Man from Atlantis, the Avengers 239, where they were on David Letterman, the Marvel team-up we've talked about, Not Ready for Primetime Players, Shazam, Isis, Spidey Super Stories, V, the...
Oh, I loved V.
Yeah, the comic book series.
By the way, if you ever want something fun, watch V, the series. And you can tell when their budget started being cut.
Yeah.
Because it would be all of a sudden, oh, what happened to that? What happened to him? Oh, he's with the Resistance in Chicago. Or somebody else gets killed off screen and never mentioned.
Yeah, because Michael Ironside.
Shoom, 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 shoom.
I love Michael Ironside. He was, what killed me for watching the show is when he wasn't on it, other than the first couple ones. All I remember is, we'll get him next time. And the other guy goes, it is next time. But this issue was just a lot.
They went from, you know, all these, you know, stuff in the city to, well, the visitors have a whole lot of warehouses on a back set at Paramount.
Anyways, this magazine was a blast. Sledgehammer, if you remember that short-lived TV show and the two issues that Marvel Dunn did. Superboy, the comic book based on the TV show. A lot of these I picked up because of the photo covers. A few of them, like, they do a big thing with Lost in Space and Comics, the wonderful series that Innovation did. And how they kind of stopped, and the really, really super rare when Bill Mumy was writing like a 13-part where they actually make it to Alpha Centauri. And I've talked about this before. And then Innovation went under, but later Bill was able to finish the series and sell it online. And of course, I know I have a copy of it. I just haven't seen it. And I'm panicky because I'm like, no, I wouldn't have sold this because this is a kick-ass series. But this was just a fun issue. There's the Bionic Woman. He talks about why wasn't there ever a Gilligan's Island comic book? Adam 12. Here's the one where you go through Buck Rogers in the 21st Century. Adam 12. The Young Rebels, which I had a copy of and sold. The Young Lawyers, didn't know about it. Room 222, which I did know because I had the comic. Nanny and the Professor, The New People, didn't. Courtship of Betty's Father, I had no idea these were comics. The Brady Bunch, which I've known about. Mod Squad. Now, the fun thing is issue 129 is going to revisit the theme, but with the animated stuff. TV Toon tie-ins, and I can't wait to get that, which should be in my next box day. But I love back issue comic or magazine because it reminds me of the comics I grew up on that I collected. Sometimes there's a tear in my eye because I know I had it, I purged it and sold it. Sometimes it's things like, wow, I didn't know about that. So this was just a fun issue to read. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. I think that's pretty much me for geeking. Corey, what are you geeking on?
Joe, I know you don't have the cable, so you didn't see it, but this week's AEW Dynamite was off the goddamn charts. It was set. They did it at the Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York. It was a pay-per-view level show. Every match was awesome. Every minute was entertaining. It was one of those shows where it's 2 hours long, and as they go into the main event, I go, wait a minute. It's only been on for like 15 minutes or something. So much fun. So well done. AEW has been the number one show on cable Wednesday nights for 5 weeks in a row. We got our first Bryan Danielson match. And it was Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega. Non-title match. 30-minute time limit. Went to the time limit. Which, of course, it has to because it's the first time they've met. And it's not for the title. And you can't have Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, lose on his first match. And Kenny Omega, it's not time for him to drop the title yet. And just a fantastic match on TV. This is the Kenny Omega that I fell in love with when he was doing stuff in New Japan. It just the slow build. New Japan matches, their longer matches, are very much of a similar type where there's a feeling out process. It's set up like a real fight where it's slow to start with and it builds slowly. And then you get a lot of their strong style where they're attacking each other over and over. And then they go for their finish moves and they go for their finish moves. And it just builds and builds and builds. Whereas WWE, it's okay. The good guy's going to win for a while. The bad guy's going to win for a while. And then whoever's going to win the match wins for a while. It's just a different pace to the matches. If you have cable, if you have TNT mobile app, if you have on demand, watch this show. It is what wrestling should be. I was blown away by how much I loved it. I do not have a desktop, and I will talk more about that when my new desktop shows up, but the old one died, which is why there was no podcast last week.
I regret to hear.
And then the new one, the replacement, was, oh, it'll be there in 2 days. And they kept delaying it until finally, very quietly yesterday, they canceled my replacement and didn't even send an email that they'd canceled the replacement. I just looked on the Amazon website to see when is my computer replacement showing up, and it's not. So it's OK. I'm just going to return it, buy it from somebody else. So I should have a new desktop by the end of the week. But
is this for work or is this something that you normally use?
This is my computer.
Okay.
No, the work computer's fine.
Okay, because I was going to tell you, and I chatted Corey online. I said, dude, you got like tons of computer shops near you because you live on the edge of a major metropolis if Chaska's not considered part of it now. You could have had one last week.
But I couldn't because I had no time to go shopping.
Yeah, well, you had time today. We could have done it today. Joel takes Corey computer shopping. You and you interweb kids. You've forgotten what it's like in the old age to actually go get one and bring it home that day.
And here's the other thing, Joe. If I buy it online, it's going to be $150 cheaper than if I buy it at Best Buy store or Micro Circuit store, et cetera, because online retailers like Newegg, they don't have the same overhead.
Yeah, and you wonder why places go out of business. Ugh!
Well, then compete. But I had time to just
so
read
for the
books.
Buy local thing. Ah, we don't want. I want. Well, you're on your geeking. I don't want to freak you.
Well, yes, Best Buy has their home offices here.
I'm not talking Best Buy. I'm talking.
Okay, who else?
I don't buy this. I'm buying everything online bullshit. But that's, again, this is a different podcast. And again, we can talk about it. Ironically, I buy my comics from Discount Comic Service, but I also buy a lot of other things because I'm visiting other comic shops.
Yeah, same here.
So,
but any place that's selling computers is going to be part of a chain.
But the point is, you could have had the computer. Well, you probably didn't need it because you can use your work computer. You could have had it a week ago instead of letting somebody screw you online.
Yeah.
If you're buying it through Amazon, that's a whole totally different scold mission.
Well, but because I didn't have my desktop while I'm working, I actually have been reading Star Trek The Next Generation, Shadows Have Offended by Cassandra Rose Clark, which is the latest in the Star Trek novels. And I am so glad they've gone back to each book is self-contained. And the reason for that is I don't have to look and see, yes, I have this book. Is there anything I need to read before this? Is it going to be continued into the next one? Nope, they're back to each book is self-contained. This one is set during the seventh season of Next Generation. Very well written. The plot is interesting. And it's a LaVox Trana Troy story. So those are always kind of fun. But I like when a book is utterly self-contained. I talked about how I kind of dropped out of reading the Star Wars books when it was, oh, God. To read this 9-book series, I have to have read 7 other 5 or 6 book series to know who any of these people are. It's as daunting as people who tried to come into Marvel in the 90s, where it's, okay, I want to read the X-Men. Oh, well, guess what? Here's the origin of Cable. Yeah, my head hurts. I'm just going to go read something else. And that's what one of the things Joe Quesada did. He said, I want people to be able to pick up a comic and not have a headache. So been reading that. I also, comic-wise, August 1961, I am also reading the first volume of What If. And Joe, I have to be honest with you, as I'm reading this, I cannot believe that this book was put out on newsstands and was popular enough to continue. Because it is one of the most inside baseball things I have ever read. I had not read the original series in a while. And as I'm reading it, I'm thinking about how, okay, the first issue turns on a plot point in Amazing Spider-Man number 1 and ties in with, you know, these early Fantastic Four stories. And Roy Thomas is really good at that. You know, and then the next one is a Hulk story based on an early issue of the Hulk. The third issue is based on a story in Avengers number 3. And on like that. But then we get to what one of my friends online said is probably the most inside baseball comic ever put out on the newsstand of all time. And that is, what if the original Marvel bullpen had become the Fantastic Four? I am amazed that as a kid, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be great. Because when I look at it now, it's like this, you have to know so much inside stuff about Marvel to know anything about what the hell is going on in this book. And I'm,
you know, the amazing
sales.
Thing is at that point in time, I did.
Yeah.
I don't know how I did, but they always, nowadays, if they refer to something from in fantasy, Amazing Fantasy 15, I don't know what anybody would know what that is. But for the rest of it, you're like, Oh, yeah. I mean, again, you know, late 80s, early 80s, late 70s. You know, maybe it's because I read the little trades or, you know, it seemed possible that you go, oh, yeah, I could own an Amazing Spider-Man number one someday. You know, not now. Reprints, maybe.
Well, now you can read it on Marvel Unlimited and you can buy a new digital copy for, what is it, $1.99?
Or they're doing the Marvel Masterworks in the smaller format. Or an epic format.
But they have the little statement of ownership because they in the omnibuses, they reprint the letters pages and any editorial material. And this book was selling around 160,000 copies every issue. It was bi-monthly. And boy, did it fall apart pretty fast. Roy Thomas and Jim Shooter did the first few. And They constantly promised the What If Conan Walked the World Today.
Today.
And Kirby did number nine, but a lot of it was Don Glut, who did a lot of what they call fan films, real low budget movies about Frankenstein and Dracula, and he's still doing it. And he wrote a lot of, you know, lower tier science fiction, and he and Roy Thomas were friends from their fan days. And you go back and you read them, and oh, this just isn't all that great. But it's a nostalgia thing, and there's so much good stuff among the dross. It's got Peter Gillis's first story. It's got stories by Stephen Grant. The bad thing is, as I read those first few issues, I went, man, wouldn't it have been great if Roy Thomas could have wrote the entire series, because Roy's issues stand head and shoulders above everybody else's. He did the story, what if the invaders had stayed together after World War II? And then he plotted the next one, which was about the, basically unraveled the whole history of Captain America. You know, yes, he was frozen at the end of World War II, but there were other Captain Americas. And kind of unraveled that whole thing and made sense of it. And it was a good story. It wasn't just a continuity dump. And as I read it, and there's a nostalgia and a feeling to these books that even though they brought What If back and it lasted a long time, because they were single issues and regular size, they just don't have the same feel to them. These felt like a big deal when I was a kid because it's, oh, wow, we're getting to see what could have happened. And I still, the best What If story was by Frank Miller. What if Elektra had lived? Because it shows Elektra living, and then she and Daredevil say, screw this, take off, go live on a Greek island.
Yeah. I still like the one with the original Korvac saga, What If He Had Won?
Yeah.
Just because I thought it was an ending. Quick question. Have you watched the What If series?
I watched the first episode and really liked it. Oh, I have not had time for TV.
The second one, I won't talk about. The second one blew my friggin' mind away. And all I can say is, you know, the gauge to me on any comic book movie or TV show is if my wife is interested in it. And she enjoyed the first one. I watched the second
the first
one on my
one was
own.
A lot of fun.
And you're gonna love the second one. I'm not gonna say nothing more. And I'm trying to get my wife to watch it. The cool thing is they're half hours. I could just sit down and, you know, bang them out. Whereas like something with Loki is more of an hour. And I'm enjoying Loki too. I just haven't gone back to it. Cause usually I'm busy. I got things to do.
Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
And that's all, folks.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
What is the best thing about Switzerland, Corey?
The chocolate?
I don't know, but the flag's a big plus. Oh, all right. Hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Hey, yo. Funk is on a roll. Can somebody call? on, bitches.